Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We have a lot to get to today. Some breaking news on two fronts. Governor Jay Inslee has finally relented, ending his COVID-19 vaccine mandate for many state workers. Also new, as in the last little bit, we have a new entry in the race for Washington governor, someone we expected would enter the race and now officially has. Also coming up in just a little bit, News Nation correspondent Allie Bradley is going to join us from the southern border as we are just 48 hours away from the end of Title 42. She's going to detail what they're seeing down there and really the terrifying prospect of what will happen starting Friday morning in this nation, how it could impact us up here in Washington State. All of that coming up momentarily. Also want to take a moment just to pitch you on becoming subscribers to the show if you have not already. If you're enjoying our live shows, you will love our Sunday show, which is exclusive to subscribers. You can visit undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com to be able to sign up and support the show, support the mission and the movement for as little as $5 a month. We would really appreciate it. All right, but let's dive right in because, like I said, we got a lot of breaking news to get to today. We had formulated our show and then things were coming in and we had to change it. I got to start with Inslee deciding finally to lift his misguided COVID-19 vaccine mandate. So I started getting texts and phone calls around 9 a.m. this morning because I've been in touch with a lot of state workers who lost their job because of Inslee's vaccine mandate. And who, you know, some of them have been tied up in litigation. And so people were like, oh my God, Inslee's dropping his vaccine mandate. So I'll read, he sent out an email to state employees and then they also put out a press release about it. The governor saying in the email that state employees got saying effective tomorrow, May 11th, executive cabinet and small cabinet state agencies will no longer require COVID-19 vaccination as a condition of employment. So this is like effective almost immediately. He went on to say that they're still hoping that state employees get the vaccine and that they are going to move to a full-on incentivization. They're going to move to just incentivizing it. I'll say it like that in case I'm not saying that word correctly. The governor is saying eligible employees who choose to provide their employer with proof of up-to-date COVID-19 vaccination should talk to their supervisor or HR office about how to receive their $1,000 incentive. Which, fine. I mean, honestly, the governor should have made it an incentive. I don't agree with bribing state employees. You know, he bribed them to get the booster. I didn't agree with that approach either. But it's certainly better than a mandate. It's certainly better than taking people's jobs away. But at this point, the big question moving forward is going to be, okay, what happens to the dedicated public servants who Inslee fired? And I think that still remains to be seen. And there are a lot of questions about that. But you know, it was silly to think that. I mean, even Biden announced before Jay Inslee that they were going to do away with the federal vaccine mandate. And we've known for a really long time, I don't have to preach this to you guys, you know as well as I do, that we've known for a really long time that the governor's vaccine mandate simply didn't make any sense. You know, if he had gone full bore and mandated the vaccine and boosters, I wouldn't have approved of that, but at least it would have been consistent in saying that, hey, we are really buying into this vaccine being something that protects people and stops the spread. But when he didn't mandate the booster, then it became completely useless, utterly nonsensical. Because as I pointed out to the governor in an interview we did a few months back, I said, you know, I could get a job as a state employee today, even though the only thing I got was the initial dose of the vaccine and it's no longer in my body. Yet someone who never got a vaccine and has the same protection I do, which is none at this point, couldn't get a job with the state. And he could not justify that because it didn't make any sense. And the truth is that all they wanted was obedience. It was really about obedience from the governor because you cannot justify it from a medical standpoint. So obviously there's a lot of follow-up to do on what this means for everyone involved. The governor's order specifically, I should note, has to do with employees that are under cabinet level positions. So his political appointees that run state agencies and their staff. I'm still waiting to see and hear whether Attorney General Bob Ferguson is going to lift the vaccine mandate for his workers. I've heard some rumors about that. I haven't seen anything come through on it today, but I imagine that he'd be kind of in lockstep with the governor, especially now that he wants to be governor and he knows that the vaccine mandates were unpopular. So that, a little breaking news coming to you all. I'm actually shocked that it ever happened. I thought he'd cling to that until his last day in office. All right, speaking of the governor's office, of course, the 2024 campaign is starting to heat up, unfortunately. I just think it's silly that anything short of the presidency has an 18-month campaign cycle. But Bob Ferguson, the attorney general, came out, said he was running for governor. There's already a couple Republican candidates who have either made it clear that they're going to run or are already running. I would say none of them have, you know, sky-high name recognition. But one of the people we were waiting for an announcement from is the Commissioner of Public Lands, Hillary Franz, who is a Democrat, and she released her campaign video about an hour ago. Here's part of it.
I'm running for governor because anything shy of epic won't cut it. The world's changing, and our state needs to make progress to keep up, to build a comprehensive climate action plan, to address soaring housing and rent costs, to expand good-paying jobs and lower costs for working families. I'm not a patient person. There's too much to do, and we can't wait. Together, we've got to plan. We've got to prepare. We've got to act now. I'm Hillary Franz, running to do, well, you know.
So I will say I didn't dislike her campaign video. Nicole and I were watching it together, and we thought it was, Nicole, pretty positive. Like, on the positive front in terms of, like...
Yeah. I didn't think that it came across as an attack ad or on anybody.
Those will come, right?
Usually
the campaign launch videos are sort of hopeful and visionary.
Yeah. Ferguson went off on...
Trump and...
Yeah, things that he's been complaining about for years.
So. Like, you're right. His did include a little fear-mongering of, like,
yes.
It included a clip of that CNN guy calling him an American hero, like... Yeah. Kind of establishing himself as, I'm the only one who could fight back against these evils of the world.
Right.
And I liked Hillary Franz. I will say that, you know, it started off very climate heavy because she is the public lands commissioner. Mm-hmm. One of the issues that she and I have discussed a lot going back to my Fox days is the wildfires. You know, I've spent time out at wildfires. I've interviewed her out at wildfires. And so that didn't surprise me. And then she got a little into, like, the housing crisis and wages and all of that. So I think the unknown for me, I've always liked Hillary Franz as a person. She and I have always gotten along very well, and I've heard good things about her from, you know, when I've been out speaking to farmers in Central Washington at, like, the Washington Farm Bureau events. They tend to like her, and she shows up. Like, if there's an emergency, she's there, mm-hmm. which is her job, but it's also good, right?
Right.
I need to feel out her policy positions on things that don't have anything to do with public lands.
Sure.
Because that's where I'm like, that's totally unknown to me. I like her as a person. I know she's been a really good public lands commissioner. I talked to a rancher who said that when she first ran, he was like, oh, God save us. And he's like, she's done everything she said she would do.
Wow.
So I know that she has respect of people east of the Cascades, which is really all you can hope for from a Democrat, because I think Democrats get too obsessed with Seattle and the politics of Seattle. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to have her in. I know we're going to request an interview with her, and I really want to try to pin her down on some of the policy positions that, of course, we wouldn't know where she stands, because why would she be on talking to us about crime and substance abuse? The one thing she did recently that really peed me off.
I'm going to guess she doesn't like Trump.
Yeah. So Hillary Franz, if you're watching this, you are never going to out-hate Trump when it comes to you and Bob Ferguson. Like, he has the market cornered on hating Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So let him live in that lane, because you're never going to be able to beat him. Because she did this thing a few weeks ago where she sent out a statement, like, as public lands commissioner, talking about the indictment of Donald Trump and, like, how it was the appropriate decision for, like, the rule of law. And it's like, dude, we know you're about to run for governor, but that has nothing to do with your job. So it scares me that she's going to fall into that, oh, I got to please the Democrats, and the only way to do that is by hating Donald Trump. And we'll get to Donald Trump on the show today because he lost this civil case. But that's just, I'm over it. Mm-hmm. I don't like Donald Trump. I've said that a million times.
Moving on.
If you're going to run for governor based on your hatred of Donald Trump, there is no way in hell that I can support you. So I hope that she lets go of that, realizes that's going to be Bob Ferguson's thing. Mm-hmm. So focus on what you've proven that you're good at, which is being someone who can be a leader across the state, who I think can unite people, and let's get you into the studio and pin you down on some of those policy positions. So Hillary Franz enters the race for Washington governor. I happen to know that there'll be possibly some other announcements coming up, so we'll be monitoring all of that. Okay, another big story that we've got to get to. We mentioned it on the show yesterday off the top that Governor Inslee in the afternoon was going to be signing Senate Bill 5599. Which is the bill that we've railed against since early February, which allows kids of any age to run away from home, show up at a shelter and say, I'm here for protected health care, be it gender-affirming care, as they call it, or reproductive health care. And then, by law, the shelter would not tell their parents where they are, which is a horrifying thing. So anyway, Governor Inslee signs this bill yesterday and just repeated those same stale talking points that the bill's sponsors pushed, which is basically like, if you're against this bill, then you're a transphobe. Here's a little bit of his remarks.
Trans youth and transgender people have become a target for disinformation campaigns and political stunts that portray them as dangerous or degenerate. Here we think it's much more important to have less ideological warfare and more focusing on efforts to help young people through difficult times. In Washington State, we reject the politics of transphobia and fear. We look for ways to help LGBTQ remain safe and supported. With this bill, Washington leads the way by taking a more compassionate, developmentally appropriate, and reasoned approach to support these youth as they access gender-affirming treatment and reproductive health care services. Thanks, Senator Elias, and many people who've worked on this thoughtful approach.
Okay. I feel the need to point out that he says, in this state, we believe in less ideological warfare. Coming from the guy who called Republicans who didn't get the vaccine like domestic terrorists, who likened them to domestic terrorists carrying around a backpack with a bomb in it. So I'm not sure that you're the one who can preach to us about tamping down the ideological warfare, Governor. Give me a freaking break. But again, what he's doing there is suggesting that the only issue at play in this bill is whether you support transgender youth. Of course, that's not it. It has not even been the key issue. The key issue is parental rights. And your slow, your rapid intrusion into the household and into acting as if the government can parent better than parents can. That has always been the central issue that I know we've focused on this show when it comes to 5599. We also have not shied away from the conversation about certain types of gender care for kids under 18 and parents not being able to have a say in that. That's a legitimate conversation, but to act as if transphobia has undergirded the entire argument against Senate Bill 5599 is so absolute. It's a lie. It's not even just disingenuous. It is a lie. So shame on the governor, not a surprise, but also for the love of God, shame on the local news media. And I'm not going to paint it with a total broad brush. There have been some people who I think have had some good nuanced coverage of 5599. Unfortunately, for the most part, it's been commentators who have had the best, most nuanced coverage of that issue. Commentators like us, because maybe it's because we have the time allowance, but when it comes to the mainstream media that's supposed to be like, you know, just given the facts, their coverage of it has not only lacked nuance to really discuss and allow, you know, platform people who have a parental rights problem with this, but we have seen repeatedly since Senate Bill 5599 really got into the public consciousness that you have a lot of the media just parroting talking points from Democrats. Like, whatever Democrats say about this bill, that's what winds up in reporting. And that's why the title of today's episode is Polly Want a Cracker, because I feel like we just got a bunch of parrots on our hands. And one of the problems is newsrooms have gotten so small and the staff is so low that a lot of them rely on the Associated Press and news wires, which means that if you see an AP article in one place, you're probably going to see the same article with almost the exact same headline published for multiple news entities. So in essence, that means that you have all of the stations or most of the stations covering the story in the exact same way because it is the exact same article from the Associated Press. And there was an example of this that is egregious. I will say one of the top five worst headlines I've ever seen in my career. Top five. And that is truly saying something. So this was the article from the Seattle Times, but it is an Associated Press article published in the Seattle Times. Transgender minors protected from parents under new Washington law. Let that sink in for a second. Transgender minors protected from parents under new Washington law. The first line reads, minors seeking gender-affirming care in Washington will be protected from the intervention of estranged parents under a measure Governor Jay Inslee signed into law Tuesday. First of all, the mere concept that transgender minors would need to be protected from their parents is insane to me. I might expect to hear that from Senator Marco Elias or a co-sponsor of the bill or Jay Inslee, but to see that parroted in a headline from the Associated Press, what is supposed to be one of the most unbiased news entities in the world, is insane to me. Transgender minors protected from parents. And again, it continues this narrative that if you're a parent and you have concerns about your minor child, as young as 13, 14 years old even, wanting to get gender care, that you are a parent, your child needs to be protected from. And now not only are Democrats saying that, the mainstream media is saying that, as mainstream as it gets, the Associated Press. And I will just point out that, unfortunately, because of all the reasons I stated earlier, this same headline or a version of it made it into multiple news agencies on their websites across Seattle. So just a couple examples. Take a look at these. Two tweets side by side, one from Fox 13, one from Como News. The Fox 13 one reads, minors seeking gender-affirming care in Washington will be protected from the intervention of estranged parents under a measure Governor Jay Inslee signed into law Tuesday. Now from Como News. Minors seeking gender-affirming care in Washington will be protected from the intervention of estranged parents under a measure signed into law by Governor Jay Inslee Tuesday afternoon. It's because these are both that same Associated Press article, and what they've done is tweeted out the first line of it. And I also take issue, by the way, with that insertion of the word estranged. First of all, the law says nothing about whether a minor has to be legally estranged from a parent in order to show up at one of these shelters. That has nothing to do with it. That's nowhere in the law. Now, if a child runs away from home and then the government hides their location from parents at one of these shelters, then yeah, I guess you could say at that point they're estranged, but it's not like it was by choice from the parents. So now we have the situation where, again, and I'm looking at this, I'm trying to look at this. I know I do commentary, but I try to look at every bill through a lens of common sense and be reasonable and rational about it. And I think we do our best to consider both sides of the argument. And I have said to me, this isn't about transgender anything. It's about parental rights. But I consider this one of the most dangerous, consequential bills ever signed into law in Washington state, because it erodes the rights of parents, of possibly good, loving parents, and hides their child from them. And I can think of few things worse for a parent than that. So here you have a bill that I consider to be, in 13 years covering politics, one of the most dangerous bills signed into law. And then you look at how the corporate media is framing it through the lens of transgender teens have to be protected from their parents. Can you imagine the mind manipulation that we're doing to these teens and to these young adults who are already, I imagine, very confused? Imagine being a teenager and thinking that you were born into the wrong body and the wrong gender. Like, that's probably already a pretty difficult mental situation for them to be dealing with. And then we have not only Democrats, but mainstream outlets that we should be able to trust that are furthering that narrative, that are furthering, you know, the Democrats planted the seed and the media's in there watering it in the brains of these kids that, you know, not only are they in this confused state, but their parents are the enemy. They have to be protected from their parents. What a horrible thing to do to these kids. What a horrible thing to do to these kids. I was upset enough about this based on the law itself, but the media coverage of it has been unforgivable, frankly. And that is one of those things where I am so glad that I don't work in that environment anymore. I will say, though, there were times even at Fox 13, which I thought we did an okay job, better than some of the other stations in town at covering things fairly, where I would reach out to, you know, our web team or something and say, hey, this headline is way off. That headline is bad. And I'm proud that I was willing to do that, but I don't think there's a lot of pushback going on. This is all just incredibly disappointing to me. And we're going to talk coming up in a little bit in our segment, Unbelievable, about what Tucker Carlson is doing now and moving his show to Twitter. And I have to wonder if this is going to be sort of a pivotal moment for the future of corporate media and whether we are going to see a significant downfall in that institution, hopefully in a positive way. But it's stories like these and coverage like this that makes me think good riddance, to be frank. Okay, another big story I want to make sure to get to is the verdict in this Trump civil case. So a Manhattan jury, this is the article from the New York Times, jury finds Trump liable for sexual abuse and defamation. A jury of 6 men and 3 women awarded the writer E. Jean Carroll $5 million in damages. Donald Trump called the verdict a disgrace. So this dates back to, E. Jean Carroll is 79, so this is something that dates back to 3 decades ago, where she says that Donald Trump sexually abused her in a dressing room at a department store in Manhattan. And she is basically saying that President Donald Trump, as she brought those accusations forth, defamed her. You know, he's always denied that this ever happened. So this jury, and again, it's a civil case, you have to understand that. And it's fair to point out that the standard of evidence and the what you have to prove is lower in a civil case than it is in a criminal case. However, you still have a jury of your peers who decided it was more likely than not that her accusations against Donald Trump were true. Now, the jury did not find that he raped her. And I think that's a significant. She has said that he raped her. And the jury did not find that, but they find that that's more likely than not that he sexually abused her. And so there was kind of that distinction there that I guess it's important to make. And that he defamed her by basically calling her a liar. So she got $5 million in damages. The former president says this continues to be not true, but now a jury has decided against him. And we kind of do a question of the day on the live show, and I asked folks on YouTube, and I'm curious to hear from all of you in the comments, if Trump being found liable for sex abuse and defamation makes it less likely that you'd vote for him. Because I know we have a lot of people who watch the show who continue to support Donald Trump and have, you know, and I've been very clear that I've never voted for him. And so this doesn't make it less likely I'd vote for him because I just wouldn't anyway. So, but you know, here's the thing. And I see people in the comments now saying, I think she's a liar. There have been a lot of women who have made similar accusations against Donald Trump. And I go back to actions before affiliation. And I think if you had a Democrat who this exact same scenario was playing out, everything that Trump had been accused of, this civil case, I think there's a lot of Trump supporters who, if it were a Democrat, would feel much differently about whether they should be the president again. And I've for a long time thought Trump was, because of his moral shortcomings, completely ill-suited for public office. So this doesn't change my opinion of Trump because it was already very, very low. But I'm interested in hearing what you guys have to say about this, being that it's a civil case. Nicole?
Well, really quick, do you think that he got a fair trial, though? So you're going based off this trial should change somebody's opinion of him.
That's my question, is does this trial change your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying whether he did or didn't do this. He probably met this woman, and whatever happened between them is known by them only, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I don't think this is going to change anybody's opinion, because you either think that they're going to continue going after Trump for stuff like this and he's totally innocent, which I don't think anybody thinks he's not like a womanizer, right?
Right. Whatever. Grab her by the pussy kind of did it for me.
Right, right. Yeah. But I think that there's no way that this was a fair trial for him. I just don't think that
but
could
happen in
New York.
Oh, in New York.
Yeah.
I mean, could it happen? I think that's a very, like...
You're right.
Who gets to decide whether it was a fair trial?
Right. You know? 30 years later. Why didn't you bring it up 20 years ago or 10 years ago or whatever? So yeah. But you're bringing it up at a time that, like, for sure in New York, the message is clear they don't like him.
Yeah.
And so how are you going to get a fair trial in that type of situation?
Yeah,
I thought 20 years ago before he was president? Maybe.
I thought it was interesting that one of the things they asked the jurors as part of jury selection, which in a high-profile case is always very important, and I've sat through many a jury selection And it's a fascinating process. And sure. I imagine it was so in this case. And one of the things they asked the jurors is like where they get their news from. Because they thought, well, that would kind of tell you how they feel. Like some of them said CNN, some of them said they, you know, flip all around. One of them said, you know, they try to avoid news as much as possible. And so you try to get kind of a good mix. But again, the standard is lower. And that's why I acknowledge that. The standard is lower in a civil case than it is in a criminal state. I think it's more likely than not, as opposed to beyond a reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. But I think you make a good point that people are pretty firmly entrenched at this point when it comes to Donald Trump. Like, if the grabber by the pussy thing didn't do it, I doubt the civil case would do it, right? And yeah, the other is true. Like, I don't think there's anything like if Trump could be acquitted 100 times and you'd still have a bunch of Democrats who say, you know, he's a criminal.
Right.
And so I think Trump is just, he is a known commodity at this point and people either cling to him or they don't. I'd like to move on from the guy. I'd like to never have to talk about these stories again. I would like someone in the White House who didn't say grab her by the pussy just because
You're saying it too many times on the show.
I'm sorry. I wouldn't even want to have a drink with someone who said that. Why would I want that person to be the president?
Sure.
Would you want your daughter to go out with somebody who said that? No. Why would you want that person to be the president?
Right.
Anyway.
But he was already president. And do I think this changes it? No. Because that came out before a president. So
You are probably right. I think it's too ingrained.
But do I wish that he would just walk away? Absolutely.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Okay, coming up, we're going to be joined by Ali Bradley at the southern border. She is a border correspondent for News Nation, and she has been in the thick of it. And Lord knows she's about to be really in the thick of it with the end of Title 42. So she's going to bring some of her perspective on the issue to us. Also, we'll talk about Tucker Carlson's new big move coming up in a moment. But first, if you're in the market to sell your home, I want you to check out our friend Wes Jones at Wes Jones and Associates by visiting his website, sellwithwes.com. I got a chance to chat with Wes about how his process of selling your home differs from a traditional real estate agent.
We have programs in place to help you prep your home. We can help cover your repairs and even cosmetic upgrades where you can pay for those at the, you know, at the closing table. We have a flexible commission structure. We have the absolute best marketing that you're going to find of any real estate agent. And there is a lot of programs and different things that we do that I go pretty in depth with on my website. So you can start by going to sellwithwes.com and go to the Sell a House feature. And you can got to go under some of the different programs, you know, that we have to learn a little bit more. If you want to check out your home's value, just plug in your, you know, your address there. And if you want to book up a consultation with me, just give me a, you know, just give me a call. My cell phone is there on the website. And, you know, it's super low pressure. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth if this makes sense, you know, or it doesn't for you, and I'm gonna treat you fairly.
Wow, Wes Jones, brave man, putting his cell phone on the website. Sorry guys, but I'm not gonna post my cell phone anywhere. But obviously Wes Jones feels like he wants to be there and be available to you, and I think that's a good thing. So check out sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com. Use their calculator to figure out your home value, get in contact with Wes, ask him any questions, talk through any concerns you have right now about the state of the real estate market. But most of all, just go there and see what he has to offer. Again, innovative marketing strategy, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, we now know what Tucker Carlson's plans are. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. So I'm talking about this in Unbelievable today because I think there are a couple things unbelievable about this story. One of them is the absolute meltdown that Network News is having over Tucker Carlson's decision. And the other thing is just that I think this is going to mark an unbelievable shift in the way that Americans get their news and the way, frankly, that Network News is going to be forced to operate after this. So, of course, Tucker Carlson got fired from Fox. He's been kind of low-key for in the days since. And he posted a video to his Twitter account announcing that he is going to move essentially the show that he was doing at Fox directly to Twitter. Here, I'm going to play the whole video, or most of the video. Here's what Tucker Carlson had to say.
You often hear people say the news is full of lies. But most of the time, that's not exactly right. Much of what you see on television or read the New York Times is in fact true in the literal sense. It could pass one of the media's own fact checks. Lawyers would be willing to sign off on it. In fact, they may have. But that doesn't make it true. It's not true. At the most basic level, the news you consume is a lie, a lie of the stealthiest and most insidious kind. Facts have been withheld on purpose, along with proportion and perspective. You are being manipulated. How does that work? Let's see. If I tell you that a man has been unjustly arrested for armed robbery, that is not, strictly speaking, a lie. He may have been framed. At this point, there's been no trial, so no one can really say. But if I don't mention the fact that the same man has been arrested for the same crime 6 times before, am I really informing you? No, I'm not. I'm misleading you. And that's what the news media are doing in every story that matters, every day of the week, every week of the year. What's it like to work in a system like that? After more than 30 years in the middle of it, we could tell you stories. The best you can hope for in the news business at this point is the freedom to tell the fullest truth that you can. But there are always limits. And you know that if you bump up against those limits often enough, you will be fired for it. That's not a guess. It's guaranteed. Every person who works in English language media understands that. The rule of what you can't say defines everything. It's filthy, really, and it's utterly corrupting. You can't have a free society if people aren't allowed to say what they think is true. Speech is the fundamental prerequisite for democracy. That's why it's enshrined in the first of our constitutional amendments. Amazingly, as of tonight, there aren't many platforms left that allow free speech. The last big one remaining in the world, the only one, is Twitter, where we are now. Twitter has long served as the place where our national conversation incubates and develops. Twitter is not a partisan site. Everybody's allowed here, and we think that's a good thing. And yet, for the most part, the news that you see analyzed on Twitter comes from media organizations that are themselves thinly disguised propaganda outlets. You see it on cable news. You talk about it on Twitter. The result may feel like a debate, but actually the gatekeepers are still in charge. We think that's a bad system. We know exactly how it works, and we're sick of it. Starting soon, we'll be bringing a new version of the show we've been doing for the last 6.5 years to Twitter. We bring some other things too, which we'll tell you about. But for now, we're just grateful to be here. Free speech is the main right that you have. Without it, you have no others.
So first of all, again, I agree 100% with every single thing that he just said. I have not liked some of the things Tucker has said and done. You know, I just mentioned Trump and things he said and the revelation that Tucker was calling women a see you next Tuesday in text messages. I have a personal reason. I really dislike that word used ever. And so that just says a lot about him to me. And so, you know, I it's not as if I'm saying that Tucker Carlson is like the end all be all for what's the truth in this country, but everything he said in that video is true. Having worked in corporate media, everything he said in that video is true. There are lies by omission and there is misrepresentation by omission. You do a lot of self-censorship in the corporate media where you don't even bring a story to a pitch meeting because you're like, they're going to say no anyway. You know, with the pandemic, you don't push the boundary too far on pushing back against things like vaccines and masks because you have this whole media ecosystem and politicians who are all rowing in one direction. And God forbid you row in the other direction. So everything he just said to the word is 100% true. And that's why, again, we go back. I always go back to that Jordan Peterson quote about you got to set up your life in a way where you can afford to tell the truth. And when I was working at Fox 13, I said this before, I could afford a lot of things, but I could not afford to always tell the truth. And so, you know, being able to do this, Tucker being able to go to Twitter and say what he wants to say without internally having to wonder, am I going to get in trouble for this? I think is a very powerful thing. Now, Elon Musk has said that there is no deal with Tucker, that they haven't worked out some sort of backroom, like, financial deal, that he's just basically kind of supporting Tucker's ability to do this directly on Twitter. And Elon Musk actually reached out to Don Lemon on Twitter, because Don Lemon got fired from CNN, although no one really seems to care. And Elon Musk said to Don Lemon, have you considered doing your show on this platform? Maybe worth a try. Audience is much bigger. So clearly Elon is open to people of different ideologies, to hosts and talents of different ideologies, doing what Tucker is doing. So that, to me, speaks volumes about the possibility for this. I will say, though, you are going to hear the corporate news networks lose it over this. Why? Well, it's because if you can just, as someone like Tucker Carlson, cut out the middleman, go directly to Twitter, and get a bigger audience than you would have, again, why do any of these hosts need their news networks? Why would people go to these news networks when they can just go to their phones, and then you lose advertising revenue and ratings and all of that? So they're probably already in full-fledged panic mode. And we actually saw it on NBC. So I'll play this clip because I just had to laugh over the it's dripping with desperation. You'll see that. But NBC asked Brian Stelter on, who was like forced out at CNN, who was like the kind of media critic. His show was about criticizing the press at CNN. Of course, only criticizing like conservative media. But listen to Brian Stelter and this host at NBC News Now absolutely lose it over the prospect of Tucker having a show on Twitter.
Okay. Well, listen, Twitter was already under fire from misinformation, disinformation, all-out lies, anti-Semitism, racism, before Elon Musk took over. And now it's gotten kind of crazy, right? Seemingly unmoored, if you will. Will anybody be able to police what Carlson says? Or is this the point? It's just a free-for-all.
I think this is the point. It is a free-for-all. It's what Elon Musk wants to provide. This move by Tucker may cement the idea of Twitter as a right-wing website.
Will anyone be able to police what Tucker says? Wow, that speaks volumes. That's from a network news anchor wondering, if Tucker goes to Twitter, will anyone be able to police what Tucker says? As someone, that NBC news anchor, who has a career because of the First Amendment, that is a scary, scary thing. And look, you know, if you work for a news network or if you work on a local TV station, who polices what you say? Well, like I said earlier, I think you have self-policing. You have editors who police what you say. You have managers who will police what you say. And then you have the FCC. And I remember this very, very clearly. Our general manager at Fox 13, when I was there, she asked us one time in a meeting, what do you think my number one job is? What do you think my number one job is? And in my head, I'm like, make money? You know, I don't know what it is. And she said, to keep our FCC license. Because if you lose your FCC license, you have nothing. So when you're in a corporate structure and you're operating that way, I understand that some policing has to occur so you don't run afoul of the FCC and the rules the government has. But if the First Amendment is true to form, should we have to abide by rules that the government has? To me, that seems like a very backward structure. That if we have the First Amendment, and it's the first for a reason, why are we operating in a system where a free press has to abide by rules put down by the government? Now, Tucker could go on Twitter and he could really go off a wall and say things that aren't true, and he doesn't have to fear losing his job. I don't know if he plans to do that. I don't think he'll ever say anything untrue intentionally, but, you know, if he buys into conspiracy theories or something, I mean, you still have people to police it, and those are the people who view the show. Those are, you know, people in the comments. And if you don't like what Tucker's saying, you don't like what he has to say, you don't think what he's saying is true, then you are the ultimate arbitrator of that, because you can decide not to watch. And so I think that the more unhinged people like Brian Stelter get about Tucker Carlson moving his show to Twitter, I think that tells you that they're very concerned about what they've built in this mainstream media environment, what they built being challenged. And for the first time, I think that they're going to see it challenged in a really meaningful way with Tucker Carlson. I mean, you can't take the top rated, I think one of the top rated hosts or the top rated host. I know The Five was higher rated on Fox, but one of the most influential news personalities in the world. And him putting his own show directly on Twitter, I mean, that is going to have a significant impact on the way the industry is moving forward. So we will see what happens. Interesting stuff, though. Okay, coming up next, we're going to be joined by Allie Bradley, a News Nation border correspondent from Brownsville, Texas. But first, do what I did. If you're, first of all, let me just say this. I know that you work hard for what you have. We all are working really hard, especially in this economy, for what we have. And if you are trying to build wealth, grow wealth, trying to just build a family, just trying to get by, nearing retirement even, it's important that you protect what you have. And Mike and I just recently took the First Mark challenge with First Mark Insurance because I'd heard Dory Monson on the radio for years and years and years talking about the First Mark challenge. And anything that Dory does, it's got to be good for me. And so when they approached us about doing sponsorship on the show, Mike and I took the First Mark challenge. And it was so great because they did this full review, especially right before we get married. They did this full review of all the insurance that we had and then what they thought we needed, what we thought we needed to add. And Mike and I found out we were woefully underinsured, which was sort of a terrifying thing given how hard we work for what we have. So Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark, and he says there really is no downside to taking the First Mark challenge. It doesn't cost you anything. And at the end of the day, if you walk away with the same insurance you came in with, that's kind of a win too. Here's Dave.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with. Okay. Now that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become First Mark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully come over to First Mark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the First Mark challenge is.
Yeah, and for Mike and I, I've heard from people who've saved hundreds of dollars a year going with First Mark. Mike and I didn't save any money, but we got exponentially more and better coverage for about the same price, which is really what we needed. We kind of knew going in that we were going to be undercovered. So take the First Mark challenge. It doesn't cost you anything except a little bit of time, and it's really, really important to do. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Make sure to tell them that you heard about them on the Undivided podcast. Okay, we are less than 48 hours away from the end of Title 42, which was a pandemic-era restriction put in place that made it easier to stop people from coming into the country. I mean, obviously, people were still coming into the country, but at least it was a tool that folks at the border had at their disposal because of COVID. That is going to end tomorrow, like at 11:59. So as of Friday, Title 42 is done, and there is a full-fledged panic. And you already see, here's some drone video from News Nation showing migrants just lined up waiting to get into the United States. Of course, our friend Allie Bradley is a border correspondent for News Nation. We asked her to come on. She is along the southern border as we speak. We asked her to come on to give us some insight about what is going to happen in the next few days. Allie Bradley, thanks for joining us. Where are you today?
I am sitting on Levee Road here in Brownsville, which is pretty much the kind of epicenter right now of this crisis that we're experiencing. Brandy, there are more than 7,000 people in custody in the Rio Grande Valley, which is where Brownsville is.
So what are you expecting over the next 48 hours?
Gosh, that's a tough question. I haven't been asked that. I don't expect things to be good. I'll say that. I think it's going to be a total system failure from what I'm hearing from agents, from what I'm hearing from ICE intel. People are worried. I will say I've covered this for 2 years. I have not been worried for my safety, but this week I am. I think it takes one person to be unruly. We've saw, chaos under the bridge at times in Del Rio in September of 21. So what will happen when we see thousands of people try to surge the border? We saw the crisis in 2019 when that caravan led by Irineo Mujica rushed the border, and that was chaos, and that was hard to really get a handle on. And now we're looking at, 29,000 people are in custody right now. There are hundreds of thousands of people over in Matamoros and other areas just along the other side of the border. We've been seeing our coverage in El Paso and Juarez. And with that said, it's going to be a free-for-all. They all believe the border is going to be open on that day. We know it's not, but that's not what they're hearing. And the cartel has to control this messaging, Brandy, because if they have people who don't believe that they can get in, they don't make money. So they have to keep telling them, yes, we'll get you in and we'll get you there safely. And you can pay us this fee and we got you. They have to control that messaging, because if migrants lose hope that there's access to the country, they're not going to keep trying as adamantly as they are right now. And so with that open door that they think is going to be there, I just don't think it's going to be something that we're going to be able to handle. They have surge resources. Alejandro Mayorkas today just announced that they are surging thousands of resources to the southern border. Governor Greg Abbott surging tons of resources as well. We know he's sending more than 500 National Guard soldiers down here to be deployed. I saw a bus just show up with National Guard here. So it is all hands on deck. We're seeing DPS and National Guard actually stop migrants for one of the first times. I've never seen that happen, Brandy, where they're actually standing on the riverbanks. I retweeted a video from Todd Bensman on the Matamoros side, and DPS is lined up along the river and they're actually blocking them from coming in, which is, I have not seen that happen in this kind of wave of people we're seeing. So they are taking measures, you know, to try to keep the border secure, but there's just going to be too many people. The reality is that, and it will subside, but it's going to be a wave for sure.
And you also said that Secretary Mayorkas has announced a new rule that will allow for the expulsion of migrants who don't take legal pathways and don't qualify for asylum. So essentially, is it a rule that just replaces Title 42, or what does the rule entail?
Well, what's really interesting is that should already be being enforced, right? That should already be enforced. That is a law on the books. That is what is supposed to be happening. And that is actually the rule that they unveiled in October to solely impact Venezuelan migrants. That was that rule. It was basically Title 42 with a new name and an app attached to it. They've expanded that to Haitian, Nicaraguan, and Cuban migrants. So you have those four groups now. Well, that to me seems like they're just expanding that, you know, basically allow all countries to fall under that umbrella. You know what I mean? If they come in illegally without the proper documentation. But I had an interaction with Secretary Mayorkas while he was down here last week, because that was supposed to be applied to Venezuelan migrants. And I had met several Venezuelan migrants, and I would encourage anyone to go and look at the thread. Men who were actually returned to the already across the border, went to Arizona, took an illegal train, hopped on a train down to Matamoros and crossed there and got in. And now this guy is on his way to Austin. No, and he did not qualify for asylum. He told me he is an economic migrant, no family here, no reason to be here outside of working, Brandy. So I asked Mayorkas that, and he told me I was mistaken. So I'd really encourage you guys to go and look at that thread, because I talked to several single adult men from Venezuela who have been let into the country under, quote, removal proceedings. And I think we need to get into that, Brandy, because Title 8 is what they're really leaning on here. Title 8 is in place right now. It's not being enforced because we don't have the capacity to hold these people while they wait their asylum claims. So yes, it's a great idea. But when you close detention facilities left and right and you empty out these facilities and don't allow detention, they're going to be released into the country. They're going to wait for a court date 2 to 5, 10 years. We know the backlog is extreme. So they're saying Title 8 will be in place, but it's going to be a lot of more of the same of what we're experiencing and have been over the last 2 years, because Title 8 has been in place for the last 2 years.
You mentioned almost 30,000 people in custody right now. I assume that's all across the southern border and all the sectors. But when you say in custody, what does that mean, and where are they being held if they are being held?
Yeah, there's different processing facilities across the southern border where these folks are able to be detained for a short amount of time. Most facilities will only hold people for 72 hours, and that is during that intake processing time. That is not where they're being detained awaiting their court cases. They are not being detained by ICE right now awaiting court cases. Now, ICE does have about 30,000 people in their custody, which is normal for a year-round time. ICE tells me that they hover around 30,000 in custody all the time. And that is detention facilities throughout the United States, Brandy. But when it comes to CBP custody, right now we're talking about the Border Patrol apprehensions and encounters, as well as the Office of Field Operations, which might be people that are catching the evading people that are running, things like that, that are not necessarily right along the southern border sectors. What I am being told, though, is the northern and coastal sectors were initially kind of bracing for deployments to the southern border, but they're telling me that they are still just virtually processing right now, helping remotely. They don't anticipate deployments to the southern border. And this is what's interesting. They say that normally they would be deployed around 18,000 in capacity, but they believe that because they anticipate surges across the nation, that they're needed in the northern and coastal sectors as well, because inevitably people will be trying to breach those sectors as well.
So you mentioned, you know, the thousands and thousands of people who have been intervened or turned themselves over to Border Patrol. One of the things that we know from the conversations that we've had with you on the show is that there are also, in addition to that, you know, untold numbers of people who disappear into the interior of the country, and they're, I think you call them gotaways. Do we have any idea, just in the past few days, how many of these known gotaways there have been?
No, and here's another kind of issue with the gotaway reporting. So these gotaways, they're people that are evading law enforcement. And the way that they're counted is they're seen on a camera or they're seen in a bailout and they're not apprehended. A bailout is these pursuits where the guys, the drivers pull over, doors open, and everybody flies out into the brush. We've seen those videos a million times. Well, those, that's how they count these gotaways. And right now, Brandy, we don't have a lot of people in the field to track said gotaways. So we don't have really accurate numbers. And we've also removed a lot of the aerostat balloons. We only have 4 left out of 12 that were originally in the air that actually were documenting people evading. So the numbers aren't, I fear, aren't going to be very accurate on the gotaways for the weeks that we are experiencing right now. I'll do my best to get that data, but I think it is going to be very skewed because we don't have the same amount of people tracking those numbers that we normally would.
Yeah, you only know what you know. And on top of that, you know, there are people who aren't caught on camera who get into the country. And so it's just this really hard thing, I think, to pinpoint an exact number or even a rough estimate. Ali, you know, when we talk about, you know, National Guard troops showing up at the border, Mayorkas saying, oh, you know, we're putting this new rule, which you're saying is just really an existing rule, into place to get people out of the country who try to come here. I think a lot of people watching would be like, why aren't we already doing all those things? Because you've been down there for 2 years, and it's because there's already been a crisis at the southern border. So yes, we're anticipating the next 2 days to be really, really bad. But I guess, why weren't they throwing the kitchen sink at it for the last at least year, year and a half?
You know, Mayorkas still won't call this a crisis, Brandy, but I think that across the board, everybody agrees it is a humanitarian crisis. And it's shocking to me that they're not at least acknowledging it as that. And the fact of the matter is this: people that are coming to our southern border have a right to claim asylum. The problem is the messaging that most of these folks we know don't qualify for asylum. 99.9% of people I'm talking to right now are economic asylum seekers, and they know that they don't qualify, but they're still here to try. So when you look at like the humanitarian side of this, right, and you say everybody deserves a chance, they do, but we don't have the resources in place to actually properly vet these people. And that's why we're here, right? That's why we have a 2-year, 5-year, 10-year court backlog that these people are placed into removal proceedings, and they're here for that much time, and they establish lives here. They have children. They live a normal life here while they're waiting for that court proceeding. And then how do you remove them after that? So it's a big mess, Brandy. And we, you know, are here at this juncture because of how many people have been let in. And it is because of the humanitarian aspect that we have let them in, right? It is allow them to seek asylum. If they have credible fear, allow them to claim that. The problem is we don't have adequate resources to sit down with these people and say, is their fear credible? So they end up in these proceedings that take years. And then it ends up being a humanitarian crisis in a different area, which we're seeing the homeless crisis explode, right? Most of these folks are kicked out into the middle of the country without, excuse my language, my mom always says it's without a pot to piss in, right? You don't have any option. And they honestly believe that most people in our country speak Spanish. They're greeted here in Spanish. Their intake, you know, their intake proceedings are in Spanish. Everything that they go through is a welcoming kind of environment at the border, and then they're kicked out into the interior and don't have anything. And so it is contributing to this humanitarian crisis we're watching unfold, and it inevitably will continue. But the reason why we're here, yeah, is because we didn't surge resources to the border. We didn't take this seriously when we started sounding the alarm 2 years ago. We didn't say there's a little bit of a problem, and then they say, okay, we need to hire more asylum officers than now. I don't know what the reason is, what the logic is behind this. I don't know the conspiracy theories behind why they're allowing all these folks in, Brandy. But the fact of the matter is it is happening, and it will affect all of us, you know, in some way, shape or form, because you can't have 6.2 million people encountered in 2 years, you know, and have, even if we say half of those people were admitted in or are in our country right now, that changes the landscape of a population. It doesn't matter. I mean, you look at Brownsville, Texas, it's a tiny community. They're basically experiencing a new population every week. Yuma, same thing. They're experiencing a new population by the month. It's going to inevitably affect all of us, and we will see culture shifts and we will see things change. Now, how is America going to respond to that and receive that? That will be something interesting to see, Brandy, because this is a very real situation, and this is something that is going to change the fabric of the nation. And we are a country of immigrants, right? But we also are, as Mayorkas said today in the same breath, said we are also a nation of law and order. And, you know, it doesn't really seem as though that is the case right now along the southern border.
Well, I think that's a good place to end. Ali, how can people watch your work and how can they follow along? Because I know you're very active in putting out videos on social.
Yeah, Twitter is the best place to find me. Ali Bradley TV on Twitter is going to be the best place. I kick things out really quickly there. Obviously, I'm on Facebook and Instagram as well, but most of my coverage is going to be on newsnationnow.com. So you can head there. Also follow along on their Twitter as well. We have boots on the ground in El Paso. We also are sending someone deploying them to Yuma. So we will have the full southern border covered at News Nation. So I hope you guys follow along.
Yeah, and please be safe because you've been in some prickly situations down there, and you've never told me personally that you felt in danger. So when I hear you say that you are worried for your safety over the next 48 hours, makes my heart sink into my stomach a little bit. So please be safe out there.
Thanks, Brandy. That's what I'm hearing. I guess I don't know if it's ignorance or bravery, but it's starting to feel a little bit different down here.
Yeah. All right. That's Ali Bradley. Thanks so much. Yeah, we appreciate Ali coming on. Always great insight. She's just been so, so good at helping us understand the issues at play on the southern border and what Border Patrol is dealing with. And, you know, I share that sentiment about Alejandro Mayorkas and, you know, all hands on deck. It's like, well, where have those hands been? Because we've had a crisis for a long time. And the only way that a crisis gets to the point where it's going to be at in the next 48 hours is that it's been allowed to spiral out of control for so long. It has gotten to the point where there aren't enough resources to bring to bear. It is going to take a prolonged period of political courage to fix what's happening at the southern border. And I share Ali's concerns about the next 48 hours. And so I certainly hope that she is safe in doing her reporting. All right, we'll take your questions from the live stream coming up next. But first, I've been telling you guys about Eastside Weight Loss Clinic because I just look so damn good now after Nicole's like, don't laugh at me, Nicole. When I say I look good, the response is not to laugh. Why are you laughing at me?
No, I love it. I
do you
love
not
the
think I look
and
good?
You really do.
Do you? Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You really do. Because
I'm down more than 30 pounds since November, and I lost most of it in just 2 months. So if you want to lose a little weight, just feel better about yourself before summer. And if you started the program now, you'd be looking tip-top shape by the summer. So Nicole hates my
You'd be just as modest as Brandy by
yeah,
summer.
Yeah, you can be humble like me
yes.
by summer. That should be their slogan. So visit EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. That's EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. And it's easy. Just you can sign up for a free 15-minute consultation that you can do virtually or over the phone if you'd like with Dr. Ryan Coogan, and he'll explain the program. You can decide if it's right for you, and then you can just be off and running to Humblesville. No?
yes.
Anyway,
that's
yes.
Where you're going.
I like the program because there's no prepackaged meals. I don't understand the diets with prepackaged meals. It's like, okay, if I lose weight on these, do I have to keep eating them the rest of my life to maintain that weight loss? So I think Eastside Weight Loss Clinic is a good plan for you. If you've maybe put on some weight recently that you're not used to carrying around, you can just shave it off quick. Not physically shave it off, I should clarify. There's no surgery involved. but anyway, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, let's take your questions from the live stream today. Ooh, we had a bundle of them. It was a lively little chat on Facebook and Patreon.
Trump gets people going.
I know. I appreciate you guys still loving me, even though I don't like him. I try not to be sanctimonious about it, because it's like, how many times can I say I don't like the guy? super comment from Pegasus Chronicle. Please discuss your upcoming interview with Franz. We don't have one scheduled yet.
I know, we're working on it.
We're working on it. I would assume that she'd come in. She needs the moderates. And I feel like that's where you get them, is on the Undivided podcast.
Yeah.
Nicole, have you asked for that interview yet while you were doing everything else?
We just talked about it. Yeah, no, I'll send that after the show.
Okay, great. Yeah, we'll update you, Pegasus Chronicle. But yes, we want to have her on. And like I said, I really want to pin her down on policy positions that as the Commissioner of Public Lands, she hasn't really had a need to or shouldn't have taken a position on. Right. Let's see, on Inslee and Senate Bill 5599 and making it about all of us just being transphobes. Add that to the list of words used to describe me this month. As we said on the show yesterday, could I not have found a better job where, like, just like running like a puppy rescue where nobody calls me a racist transphobe and where I don't have to beg you guys for $5 a month?
I would still work with you if you had a puppy rescue.
Well, of course you would. That would be fun. Okay, Todd says on 5599, wow, we're going overtime today. 5599 needed to have a judiciary process in it where a guardian ad litem should be assigned, family court, possible mediation. 100%. There should be some legal avenue for parents who are like, hey, you got my kid in that shelter. I'd like him back. There's none. That's terrifying.
It is.
That is crazy. Jackie says, as a parent, Jackie on Patreon, thank you, Jackie, for being a subscriber, says, as a parent, I find the law incredibly hurtful. We do our best to be loving, open-minded people, and I hope my daughter will never feel like she cannot talk to us and needs to run away. But to have the state make a law keeping me from learning my minor child's location if she ran away to seek gender-affirming care is so scary, hurtful, and just not right. Worse is the incredible arrogance that the state knows best. 100% agree. Yet that perspective would make me racist and a bad person. It's shameful the Associated Press is showing bias in their coverage instead of just reporting the facts, what the law does, and what it takes away. 100%, Jackie. On former President Donald Trump, wow, you included a lot of comments about Donald Trump.
There was a lot of comments.
I was responding to some in the comments as well. Gary said, well, Clinton ruined a perfectly good dress and he stayed in office, didn't he? And I was but a child. I think I was 3 years old.
You know the story.
When that happened. But what I'm saying is people are always like, well, why didn't you say that about JFK or Clinton? It's like, well, I wasn't alive for JFK and I was three. So I guess we'll never know if I would have covered those Democrats fairly. Well, I like to think I would have if I were a journalist at the time.
I would like to think so too. But I think that the times are different as far as social media and how, I mean, it takes a different person to run for president these days than it used to because of the scrutiny you can take from social media and just all these different platforms that are coming at them. And the attacks on character. I mean, people kind of look the other way back in the day. If he was a cute JFK...
What's Bill Clinton's excuse?
Whatever. He was very... Oh, people loved Bill. People thought he was cute. Oh, I think they did. All right. But anyway, but they thought he was young and handsome, right? And so they just look the other way and all the other things.
Well, maybe your issue is with, like, Democrats not, like, talking about that as much. I mean, that's, like... 20-something years ago.
I think the times have changed. So I think it would be talked about these days because things would have gotten out sooner.
But also, is that where we have to set our standards? Is because this person did it, we can go lower than that or up to that point? Because it's like, yeah, Bill Clinton got to keep his job, but he shouldn't have been able to. But since he was, every other president can do at least something as bad as Clinton and they should be able to keep their job too. I feel like that's how you race to the bottom.
Yeah, I don't think I don't take that from these comments. I take these comments as the Republicans are being attacked for standing behind this guy that did good things for the country.
Yeah.
Regardless of what he did in his personal life. And they're saying, well, Democrats did the same back in the day.
Not all Democrats. So. You know, it was interesting this one time I was interviewing the former state Democratic Party chair, Tina Podlodowski. And I was with her in the Republican chair and he, you know, had thrown out something about Bill Clinton, kind of a similar conversation. And she's like, well, actually, I resigned from Bill Clinton's like campaign or something when those accusations came out. So it was like, oh, she was being morally consistent. Yes. So there are some people who were. Okay. Mira says, I don't care for Trump's personality, but personality versus policy. I don't have to live with his personality. I do have to live with his policies. I will 100% vote for Trump over Biden because of this. And look, I understand the personality versus policy thing. I had somebody else in the comments who said, Brandy, why do you support Biden? I don't support Biden. I hate that our choices have to be Trump or Biden. Like, I hate that that's what our system is giving us right now. Jeremy says, why can't we get a president other than touchy-feely Joe or the mouth? I've never heard Trump called the mouth.
That's why I put it in here.
Is that a nickname? We need someone who will bring everyone together for the people, not divide us further. Yeah, that's my sentiment. So Janelle writes, why does everyone hate on Trump but not Kennedy or Clinton or probably many other presidents that mostly likely had affairs? And people did hate on them. In fairness, Republicans were pretty hard on Clinton.
Yes.
Yeah. So, like, this is again.
To this extent, no.
Well, it's because, you know, social media, but actions before affiliation. Like, if you were hard on Clinton, you should be just as hard on Trump. I feel like we give away a little bit of our morals when it's someone who agrees with us politically. I feel like, well, I'll let it slide from them because I agree with them. Where it's like, that's no way to teach our kids.
I also think, well, both of, and this isn't an argument on the other side that I'm making, but that both of those people, Clinton and JFK, neither of their accusations came out until they were already president for the most part. I mean, JFK, it never really did come out, but for sure Clinton, all of the bad stuff came out later, where Trump, we knew going in what we were getting.
That is true. Okay, I'm going to move on to Tucker comments right now since we are getting down there on time. Paul says, Carlson accurately described the manipulation and omission and distortions that are present in many, if not all, news commentary programs. And not just news commentary. Like, I think he's talking a lot about just straight news. He's very well versed and experienced. I'm always impressed when someone accuses others of things in which they are immersed. Yeah, and I think that's part of it. And also it's part of why the media, the rest of the corporate media, is so nasty to Tucker Carlson, is they see him as like a turncoat. And like when I left Fox 13, like the number of local reporters who I was like persona non grata with for like my criticisms of the media, it's true. They don't like that. Is turncoat the appropriate phrase for that? Yeah, you're like a turncoat. Anyway, I hope that's not a racist just phrase. I didn't know it was racist. Let's see. Aaron on Patreon. Aaron, thank you for being a subscriber. Appreciate you. We've been seeing this corporate media downfall for a few years now. As we move forward, I'm convinced that podcasts and independent publications are the most viable vehicles for journalism and public information. It's easier to have nuanced conversations. Conflicts of interest in advertising and content are minimized. Experts can be heard unfiltered and in their own voices. It's a win-win. Yeah, and I think, again, I think the danger is you're going to get Americans more firmly planted in their silos. I mean, people who listen to this show or watch this show, they are probably going to be somewhere on the spectrum of moderate to independent, or at least I think open-minded. So yeah. I don't think this is the worst echo chamber. I mean, we're an echo chamber, but I think we're an echo chamber in the sense that you guys are independent-minded and open to hearing different opinions.
Right.
So we're the best. We're the only acceptable echo chamber.
This is where the majority should be, right?
Right.
So,
but when you have independent outlets, a lot of the times they pop up and they serve a specific purpose and they have a specific voice, which is fine. But I think as that rises and as the corporate media falls out of favor, I do think it might serve to put people even more into their own echo chambers. So the question is, what emerges from this?
Right.
You know, I think this is going to be a complete meltdown of the system. Of media, and what is going to emerge from that is going to be whatever Americans decide they want it to be. And so it's going to be fascinating, I think, 5 to 10 years. And we'll see if we survive it.
I like in that clip, the MSNBC clip that we played, that he calls it a free-for-all. Oh, Twitter's just going to be a free-for-all, which in reality he means free speech, a place for free speech.
Right.
And he's it needs more policing and less free-for-all, so less free speech. It's ridiculous.
It's crazy. Aaron goes on to say, I'm glad you found a niche, and I hope Undivided scales up to be a major authority in the Pacific Northwest. That's so nice. You're already a respected voice, hence your success thus far, but there's massive potential here as corporate media's biases yield horrible decisions for truth and unbiased reporting. Yeah, I mean, our goal is to just keep growing as much as we can. We started with just a 1 half-hour show out of the spare bedroom of my house. Now we're doing 4 live shows a week, a show on Sunday, trying to add content all the time. Nicole's here. I think that's pretty good for a year and a half, right?
It's very good.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities and a lot of visions I have about bringing in other independent journalists and trying to produce more content, but it's just one thing at a time. And we appreciate everyone who subscribed to the show to help us do this. I mean, we couldn't do it without funding. You can't just be an independent journalist and then not have a job.
keep telling your friends.
We'll get to the pitch here in a moment. But let me end with today's sanity check on one of my favorite politicians. And by favorite, I mean least favorite. Never should have been a politician. George Santos. This was fascinating to watch play out over the last 24 hours because there was like AP reporting that said that a federal indictment of George Santos was imminent. And George Santos comes out, he's like, news to me. And then like 6 hours after that, it was George Santos charged. And then a few hours after that, George Santos, this is the headline from the Associated Press. This is actually just updated because he's pled not guilty now. George Santos pleads not guilty to duping donors, stealing campaign cash to burnish wealthy image, and this AP article says, to buy designer clothes. So it goes into this. I mean, we already know the guy is just a liar. I mean, he's lied about nearly every facet of his background. And, you know, he got away with those lies until after the election. So I'm not going to blame voters for electing him in New York because they didn't know. And then this web of deceit started to unravel. I think what is truly insane is that he's refusing to resign and he's refusing to stop his reelection bid. Like, if you don't want to resign until you're convicted, fine. Everyone has a right to their day in court, not the court of public opinion. I'm making my judgment on him based on the court of public opinion and the demonstrable lies that he's told, like work and education history. You can't lie about those things because we can easily find out. He's only 34 years old, I found out. George Santos and I are the same age. Interesting. He was released on $500,000 bond following his arraignment. It is a 13-count federal indictment. He's facing charges of wire fraud, money laundering, theft of public funds, and making false statements to Congress. He could face up to 20 years in prison if convicted. And apparently, among the many things that he's accused of doing, he's accused of lying to Congress about being a millionaire. At the same time, he's accused of lying to collect unemployment benefits. And he's also accused of misusing and misappropriating campaign funds for personal expenditures like designer clothes. Which none of that surprised me, knowing all the crazy stuff that he lied about. But I think this is truly going to be America's sanity check, where we decide, here you've got a guy who is, and I hate the word grift, because people call me a grifter all the time, because I'm giving my opinion, and I get paid to give my opinion. I don't know. But he is clearly running a grift. That's what his 2024 campaign is. He's out there, he's saying, oh, people are out to get me, the left is out to get me, when the preponderance of evidence shows he's just a bad guy who lies for a living. And he is just going to keep this 2024 campaign going to try to get funds to continue this sort of lie that he's living. And the real sanity check is, are people going to let him do it? Are people going to give him money? And I think George Santos is like, hopefully, this tipping point where we can stop the insanity as Americans and expect more of the people who serve us. We talked about this with Trump, for instance. I feel like we've gotten to a point where we let politicians or would-be politicians get away with an awful lot, get away with far too much. And I think we just have to get back to a point where, regardless of the political party, we have a high bar for anyone seeking elected office. And I, like I said, I hope George Santos is sort of the tipping point where it's like, wow, we let people get away with so much that this guy thinks he can actually run for another term and win. Absolutely insane. Okay, that's been it for today's episode of Undivided. This was a fun one, guys. We had so much news, so much going on, so many comments from you. I appreciate it. As we were saying earlier, I would love for you to become a subscriber to the show. It's the only way we can continue to do this. It's the only way. I hate begging for money, but it's like, if you like the show, if you have $5 a month, we would love for you to become a subscriber. You can go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com, and you can find out how to watch the show, how to listen to the show, but most importantly, you can find out how to subscribe to support the show, to help us with giving common sense a comeback. All right, I'll see you guys back here at noon tomorrow.